A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
No one is home, and I am, like, so busy. I'm, like, scrambling today to get everything done. So I was like, fuck it. I'm not going to actually, like, do the extra work that it is to set up. I'm just going to...
Yeah, I'm into it.
Ship out and show up.
I'm into it. Can I show you my view really fast? Oh, my God. I hope this doesn't break anything. Okay, can you see my view?
Wow, unreal.
It's fucking...
Where are you? That's beautiful.
That's the Niagara Falls. That's literally the Niagara Falls right there.
Darling? Darling?
That's unreal that's your view. That's your hotel? It's crazy. I would just sit with my chair against that window all day.
Yeah.
Can you believe I'm like, whoa, that place is kind of nice.
That's
You're like,
nice.
It's Niagara
yeah.
Falls, you
No,
fool.
It's a fucking, it's the Niagara Falls and it's the Horseshoe Falls. So it's a beautiful one. And at night it lights up. It's stunning. It's gorgeous. So we're here in Niagara for the show for like 5 days.
Oh my God.
And it's amazing. It's great. And Quinn, I'm going to tell you the best part about this because it's very fun. So when you're at a casino...
Well, send me pictures of the fucking light show. That sounds cool, too.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Did I take a picture? Hold on, let me see if I send it to you.
I mean, that's right up my alley. That sounds terrific.
Did I take a picture of it two nights ago? I took so many pictures. No, I haven't yet. That's okay. I will send it to you tonight. The best part about this, though, is that when you're at a casino, because the food here is so expensive, they know that when you're an artist... And they give you a card that has $125 a day for food.
That is so crazy. What have you been eating?
I'm
Lobster
trying
tail?
Not
That's
to like,
so
no,
crazy.
Things are expensive here because it's Canadian dollars. So it's more expensive looking. And then also it's a casino. So like a salad is $25.
Sure. But that's what it is at fucking
like
Sweet
I had
Green. If you
salmon
like add
for
tofu.
I mean, listen, like. It was great. It's been great. It's been great. I have no complaints. I've been trying to eat some green vegetables. And then the other day I went and got a massage because I was like, you know what? I've been on the bus for 3 nights. I deserve a little massage. So I got a massage for myself, which was great. The guy like laid into my back. It's been good. It's been very good. It's been fun learning
it's
a lot.
So nice to be out of your bunk and in that room, right?
Oh my God. And for 5 days, I'm like living, I'm looking at the fucking Niagara Falls, like right outside my window. That's nuts.
I think it's nice that it's a back and forth thing because you really will appreciate the hotels in a different way because you're sleeping in that weird bunk and then you like come here and you're like, this is luxury.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty cool. It is pretty fun. The bunk I've had 3 nights on the bunk. They were fine. They were fine. They were decidedly fine.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what it is.
That's all you can hope for.
That's all I can hope for. They were fine. How are you? You've had a stressful week.
I'm okay. I'm just busy. I would say like nothing is nothing. I don't know. Nothing I can't handle, baby.
I know
Matt's
you can
out of town,
it, yeah.
you know. He's out of town, so like things are a little hairy just because you're like in charge. And it's really funny. I keep the house really tidy when he's gone and it's funny. I was just saying to somebody, and then in my head, I think the house is only ever messy because of Matt. But the truth is that I keep the house clean when he's gone because I feel like I'm in control. And then when he gets like, but I also notice that, like, I do things I'm not normally doing. Like, if I see a toilet paper roll needs to get changed, I change it because I'm the only grown up in the house. But that makes me realize that when Matt's here, I see things that need to get done all the time. And I'm like, there's another grown up. So I leave it. So I'm like, the house is actually clean when Matt's gone because you clean. And then Matt comes back and you stop. So the house isn't dirty because of Matt. It's dirty because of you. It was a really interesting revelation.
You know what? These are the moments you go, huh, huh, huh.
Things that make you go, hmm. Oh, speaking of things that make you go, hmm. Tuesday night, I went and saw the new horror movie, The Substance, with Demi Moore.
How was it? Oh,
my God. First of all, it should be illegal for any theater showing that movie to sell or serve food.
Oh, it's that insane?
It's that.
Okay. So it's like The Revenant? It's
that insane that you're like, I ordered a chicken sandwich and didn't eat it. Insane.
You didn't eat it. Wait,
There's no way I could eat this. I had like two bites at the beginning and then I was like, okay, that kind of movie. And then I was like, there's absolutely, even just down to like, there's a scene with Dennis Quaid eating shrimp and talking to her. And it's the most disgusting scene I've ever witnessed, like maybe more than the body horror stuff. And I was like, this is so gross. I'm going to throw up.
Okay, but did you
the sound design is like,
God.
Way overboard, like deliberately so that you're like living in the sounds of people's bodies and lip smacking and like you can like hear people sweat. It feels like it's so over the top. I was ill.
Okay, but
afterwards.
Did you take the chicken sandwich home as leftovers?
I did not.
You didn't?
No. It was like I didn't think I could look at food ever again. Like when I got home, I wasn't like, and now I'm hungry because I didn't eat. I was like, I can't eat. Matt's like, I'm making popcorn. I was like, good for you. I didn't eat the popcorn. Like it made me feel very weird.
Quinn, that feels big for, I mean, I know when something is wrong, if I'm not eating, something is really profoundly wrong, really wrong. Something's bad has happened. And you should be worried about me.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't think you should see it because it's too much. But
I could probably use it. I'm like I'm doing Wheel of Fortune. Like I feel like I could go for like a dark. You know what I mean? Like
I'm interested in talking to people about it. You would like the message. Like the message is a really fun, good body image message about like us just like treating older women as gross garbage. And what it does to one's psyche. And so like we're definitely on board with the messaging there. It's nothing new necessarily, but the way that it's being done is so – it feels like it's through anger and tears aggressive, like a temper tantrum at you. And it's like – it feels like they were like – you know, I was editing one of our episodes where we were talking about the dancing in The Perfect Couple. Mm-hmm. It feels like anything that occurred to this director, it was like, yeah, let's do it, but only if we do it 3,000%, not 100. Like everything feels like that.
I'm into that. Who directed it?
I don't know, but they're insane.
I don't know, but are they okay? I don't know, but are you okay, girl? Do we need to talk about this?
Actually, weirdly, is it a guy? It might be a guy, which is even weirder. Mm.
Hold on, wait. Let me close this curtain because the light's on me. Not that we're using this video anyway, but figured I'd protect my face.
Right, for all the videos that we publish for our people.
That's better. That's better for my eyes.
Welcome. You're listening to Truly.
Darkly. Creeply.
Creeply. I'm Q-Dog.
And I'm Carrie Ipama. If you've noticed, Quinn is no longer saying her last name. Oh, I updated, by the way, on our thing. And what had happened was it usually said Quinlan Posner and Carrie Ipama share spooky stories. And then I was like, oh, so I just went Quinlan and Carrie Ipama. And I was like, oh, that looks like we're married. So I had to change it to.
I like that.
Okay, then I'll change it back. Because I did Carrie Ipama and Quinlan. You're just one name like Madonna. People are like,
oh, fun. A lesbian couple telling these stories? That sounds great. And then they'll listen and be like, this couple needs counseling.
Are they okay? They seem to be apart a lot. They seem to be physically not in the same place a lot. And poor Quinn is raising those two kids on her own, and Carrie is talking about visiting them. Like, what's happening?
But visually, they'll think that's you.
Officially, they'll think I'm the mother because you posted more photos of me with the kids on our Instagram. So good. I have an interesting, I don't know if I want to include this, but I figured I would talk about it because it's sort of top of mind right now. And I know we should get into the story because I have a very long one. But
I have a long one too.
What'd you say? Gosh. Shit.
I have a long
one.
Okay,
well, maybe we can talk about this later. But basically, I had some like light sexual harassment happening to me.
Through the job?
Yeah. It's a dang it moment. And it's the thing is it's a person who I don't think knows, but like, here's what happened. When I meet people, I give them a hug. I'm like, very nice. You know me. I go for it. And
of course, Midwestern.
I'm your husband.
Midwestern, I said.
You said you're my husband. And I was like, yeah, I am.
Of course you're my husband, Carrie. Quinlan Impama. I know. I know what you do. I know what you're like.
It sucks that I'm doing all the cleaning. You know what I mean? Like, these are the things that we're learning. So anyway, so I meet this guy and I give him a hug. And then I notice every time I see him, he like wants to give me hugs, but like long hugs in a way that I'm like, oh, this makes my body feel uncomfortable. And so I'm like putting distance or whatever. I'm in the back of a car. We're going in a car, and in the back, there's only one seat, and I don't want to sit by him. So I'm like, okay, good. So I like get in the back, and this person is not on tour with me, to be clear. So that's the good news. But I get in the back seat. Like, he just was a part of the team. I don't know if I should keep it, but anyway, the back seat, and he tries to get in next to me. And I was like, oh, there's no seat there. There's no seat there. Okay. So he's in the front and I'm like, wow, it's really warm back here. Like the air conditioning. And he just goes like, you're hot. And I just kind of like ignore it. And then he goes, can't take a compliment. And I just go, huh. And it's that feeling of like, did I hear that correctly? Like I think of myself as a strong feminist and someone who will stand up for herself, but like in that moment, it became like, did I hear that right? What's, you know, and you miss the opportunity and you move on. And I'm new. This is my first day at work, really, or the second day. Like, I've met these people for 24 hours. And so I'm kind of like figuring out what the vibe is. And one person hears it. But to their credit, like, you know, they were like, do I call it out? Whatever. I've talked to them since. And they were like, I didn't know I was going to check in with you. So then the next day or that night, the next night, the bus comes and the company manager's like, Carrie, do you want to take a look at the bus? Which was great. So I got to go put my stuff down, kind of like feel it out without everybody there. And she was like, he's there, because I had already told production about this instance. I made sure to report it right away. And I was like, you don't need to say anything, but you should know this happened. So I get in the bus and I am like putting stuff away or something, and I maybe drop something and I'm like, oh my God, what an idiot. And he's there and he just goes, yeah, you deserve a spanking. And I go,
no.
I go, I'm sorry, what did you just say? And I go, you can't say that to people. And that's like all I said. But I was just like, what the actual fuck? Like, one, just as a comment, like, nobody should be using the word spanking in public. Okay, let's just like call that what it is. Like, the word spanking should not come out of your mouth.
It's an embarrassing word.
It's an embarrassing word. Like, if you're using it about your kids, a little outdated, you know, take a look at some studies.
Just say you hit him.
Just say you hit him. Just say you hit him. Just say you hit him, because it's the same fucking thing. Spank.
We don't want to hear you say that word.
Nobody wants to hear a grown adult. Like, I'm sorry I'm saying spanking and it's in your ears right now. But listen, someone said this to me and I need to say this. I'm like, so I'm sitting there being like, and you know what I fucking hate when this shit happens is now the burden is on me. And then a couple days later, we're in a group chat and he just goes, hey, Carrie, how was your first night in the bus? You know, just like asking questions that like, this is not professional. Don't fucking talk to me like that. I don't.
Well, and he already made it weird. The truth is, if anyone else said that to you, you'd be like, fine.
Yeah.
But now you're like high alert.
High alert,
like,
man. High fuck fucking
off
alert.
It's like the response now. Same as like if he goes for a hug, you better believe
my,
you're going to be
my
like,
boobs
hey, buddy,
are
we've
far,
moved to high fives.
My boobs are
we've
so,
moved to
I
high
am a
fives.
Concave lady. You know what I mean? Like, I'm giving a hug. If I'm giving.
No, you got it. You got
yeah,
it.
No, we're,
stop
we're
the
no,
hugs.
No, no more hugs.
Like,
no more hugs. Hugs are off the fucking
we're
table.
We're high fivers now.
Hugs are off the table. And so now I'm just in this thing of being like, so production's like, should we say something? And I was like, yes, I think I should also say something too, to be like, hey, dude. And also what's great about both instances is that there were other people that saw these comments at me. So I'm very grateful that it was not in a vacuum and I'm not able to gaslight myself totally, you know? But it's interesting. Then last night he was in town, he's here. And I just had to ignored him. And then when I saw him, I like smiled. And then someone from the cast came up and was like, hey, I got to talk to you. You can't be that nice. And I was like, I didn't say anything. He's like, but you smiled. And I was like, fuck.
No.
I know.
That's not fair.
I know. And the thing is, what's hard is it's totally.
It doesn't fall to you to do anything differently.
I know.
It falls only to him to change his behavior.
But I haven't said anything and I need to, but his wife is here. So it's like, I'm sitting here. And it's and this is what rails, this is what pisses me off, and I think a lot of people can identify this, is like that feeling of being like, you know what, why is the burden on me to address it? Like, I'm so annoyed that I'm like thinking this is occupying any space of me having to talk to this person, having to text him, having to be like, yo, it made me really uncomfortable. Like, I already know what I'm going to say. What you did made me uncomfortable. Moving forward, let's keep it professional. I think what is upsetting to me is I hate the idea of saying this to someone when they say something fucked up like that. And then it occupies more time where they apologize and it has to take up more space in my life. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've been in that situation where someone hits on you or says the wrong thing and you call them out and they go, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it. And you're like, fuck you. Like, I don't want to have to accept a fucking apology that you're only saying because I goaded you into it. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I'm uncomfortably smiling. So I'm just feeling, yeah. I mean, I feel like I want to keep this in, but I also don't want to blow up anyone's spot. And I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for, you know, commenting on the tour.
No, you're not going to get in trouble. Nobody listens to this podcast.
True.
You're just throwing noise against a wall. I think it's good to talk about.
I think so too. I think it's totally, I think everybody has had this experience in one way, in one form or another. And it's hard.
And it's interesting to experience it when you're like,
when I
older.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Cause like we all had it happen to us when we were like
kids.
Young hotties.
Yeah.
And it was different then cause we felt different about it. And, I think we like knew so much less and we're even less able to advocate for ourselves.
Yeah. And I told all the right people, so there are people that know about it. And I honestly, like, I don't think – and I'm not excusing the behavior because I think the behavior is inexcusable. I know it's not in a place of danger, but I know it made me feel uncomfortable, and so I do need to address it. I just get so annoyed that the people who have this – who have experienced this – the burden is on them to address it, to confront it, to resolve it. And I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I just am like, fuck, that feels really unfair. And also, like, I don't like listening to people. I don't like listening to apologies when I don't, like, I'm sure it'll be authentic, but I'm also like, just don't say the fucking weird shit. And it was like, it was the doubling down of everything, you know?
You know, a lot of opportunities to notice how you were being in backpedal and they're not happening. So I think it's good if it gets addressed because.
Yeah.
It's also like, what do you lose?
Yeah.
In the sense that like, you're not like, it's hard because I really like him.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, okay, we're not going to be friends.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. And it's hard, you know, I mean, I think, yeah.
Let's thank somebody though. But thank you for telling me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wow,
you really moved on quick. Fuck. I guess you don't care about me.
I'm over it. You should be too, babe. Kyra K-Y-R-A.
Kyra. I wouldn't say Kyra because Kyra sounds different like a name. Kyra, you are a star. Kyra.
Oh, that was all you gave?
Well, I was giving the first verse. I went for...
No, no, I'm criticizing you because
okay,
I have
okay,
nothing.
I'll keep going. Kira, Kira, you are here to stay. In our Patreon, you're going to get like 65 episodes today. Kira, Kira, you are a hero. And we love you so much. You are a star. Kira, Kira.
Kira. Have no fear.
Your contribution is duly noted, appreciated, loved, and as your husband, really love it. Really, I'm so glad. Lately. I think back,
couldn't do without
it. I think
it.
Back to the vows I've taken with you and think, that's it.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Who goes
Me,
first?
It's an even episode, and I'm excited to go first. Part of me is going... Did you cover this story too? Because I would actually love to cover this one together.
I just watched the documentary that's on Netflix, Into the Fire. Have you?
I know nothing.
Oh my God.
I know nothing, Jon Snow.
It's fucked. It's so fucked. And you know what? Stop this episode. You're not listening to it. Anyway, go watch the
get out of here.
Go watch the fucking documentary. It's insane. It's two episodes. I'm going to try to do it justice. It's called Into the Fire, The Lost Daughter. I also got some information from Time Magazine, Holland Sentinel. I want to introduce you to Kathy Tarkanian. She, in 1974, she is 16 years old and she has a baby. A 16-year-old with a baby has a baby. So she's taking care of her kid. She names her Alexis Miranda Badger. And her mom is harping on her, you're not going to be able to take care of this child. You have to give the baby up for adoption. And she ends up staying Alexis's mother for 9 months. And at 9 months, she makes the impossible decision to give her baby up for adoption. From her perspective, she is told she can give her daughter a chance at a loving home, at a family that will love and care for her. So at 16, her daughter is 9 months. She gives her baby up for adoption. She thinks about her every day. She misses her and she hopes for one day that her biological daughter will come and find her, but it's a closed adoption. So she doesn't have any rights and she can't find out who she is. Mm-hmm. 35 years later, in 2010, she receives a letter from a police office or from a sheriff's department, whatever, asking for her DNA. They found a body in Racine, Wisconsin, that they think might be her daughter's, and they need to see if her DNA matches. This ignites, I mean, this obviously, she realizes her daughter hasn't come looking for her in 35 years. This ignites this feeling of, oh my God, what happened? I need to find out everything I can about this child, about my kid that I gave up for adoption. She doesn't have, the police, they can't give her any information because she is not legally the mother. She's not a part of the family, so they can't give her any information. So she resorts to online. Armed with the knowledge of her child's birthday, she looks up missing cases, missing children. And mm-hmm. she finds that in 1989, a 14-year-old in Michigan named Andrea Bowman goes missing. Andrea Michelle Bowman, which I think is interesting because she named her Alexis Miranda Badger, AMB. And then when she was adopted, her
is
Andrea Michelle Bowman. So at this point, she finds out that her biological daughter has been missing since 1989. At 14 years old, she left the house. Her parents came home and she was gone. And there was some money missing in her jacket and they'd never seen her again. There were people that said that they saw her in Holland, Michigan, which is like the next big town over from where her family was, which is in Hamilton, Michigan. So the adoptive parents are Brenda and Dennis Bowman, and the two of them have met in high school and they've been together ever since. And when they tried to start a family, she had some uterus abnormalities that made getting pregnant very, very difficult, if not impossible, very, very difficult. So they went on the path to adoption and they get a call and there's a 9-month-old baby, you know, little Andrea waiting for them. They adopt her and they adopted her in Virginia and they eventually moved to Michigan because Dennis was in the Navy there. They moved to Hamilton, Michigan, and it is a very small town vibes. People go to church. Everybody knows everybody. And interestingly enough, 10 years after they adopt Andrea, Brenda finds out she's pregnant. So she's able to carry her own child 10 years later. And then their daughter, Vanessa, is born. Around this time, they say Andrea has some behavioral issues that she's acting out, and they try to get her counseling. And then, like I said, one night in 1989, Brenda goes to work. Dennis drives her with their child, and she goes missing. They come home. She's gone. Dennis calls the police. Again, there were some sightings, but there's no leads, and they believe she is a runaway, so they treat it as such, and they don't really investigate any further. And the case goes cold. They never find her. They keep posting photos of her, but that sort of falls to the wayside. What's interesting about this is her birth mother, Kathy, was also a runaway at 14. So when she finds this out, she has this, I think, very maternal reaction of like, hey, I know what it was like to be a runaway. People forget about you. People discard you. And also, she's been wanting to reconnect with her daughter, her biological daughter, for 35 years. And so hearing them that there's this possible body, it's like invigorates her, and she's on a quest to find her kid. She gets a letter after she gives the DNA test, and she receives a letter saying that the DNA was not a match with the body in Racine, Wisconsin. So she is on a mission. She is on a quest to find her daughter. At this point, she connects with this guy, Carl Koppelman. Carl Koppelman is really an interesting. He is an amateur sleuth. He joined Web Sleuths, and he is an accountant who loves spreadsheets. And so what he's done is he looked at all of these missing cases and these Jane Doe body photos, and he tries to match them up. And it's because of him that he says, hey, I think this runaway, this missing person could be this body. He like locates the general area, when they're missing, when they're found, and tries to match photos to whatever their photos is. And he's, again, he's like, I'm just an accountant who's really good at spreadsheets. He just has solved so many cold cases. He ended up making this definitive missing person spreadsheet that has over 19,000 names on the list. And that's what he does. He sits in his chair and he tries to solve the puzzle of these cold cases. It's really fucking incredible. Kathy is really invigorated to start this search. So she starts looking into Andrea Bowman's missing persons case, and she realizes there's like not a lot of information out there. There's no posters out there. There's no one's still searching for this child. And I know this person is an adult at this time, but she went missing at 14. So I'm going to call it a child. I'm going to call her a child. So she's looking for this person, and she decides, you know what, if nobody's going to do it, I'm going to do it. So she starts a Facebook group called Find Andrea M. Bowman. And she says as soon as she starts up this Facebook group, people just start writing in, whether it was Andrea's friends from high school telling them stories, whether it was relatives who said, we miss Andrea, we don't know what happened to her, we want to find her. And then they get this message from this woman named Meta McLeod. She talks about how in 1989, December, so the same year Andrea went missing, she was 6 years old. She was in Holland, Michigan, which is nearby Hamilton. And she was going to a friend's house, and she begged her mom to walk to a friend's house. And her mom was like, no, no, no. And Meta kept begging. And she was like, okay, but as soon as you get to your friend's house, you call me. So Meta is 6 years old, and she's passing by this gas station, and this car pulls up, this red pickup truck pulls up and says, hey, your mom called and she wants me to show you some puppies. And so he grabs her, puts her in the car. She's recalls looking, going, is this the barn that we're going to look for puppies? Is this the barn? She says there was a police officer at one corner and the guy got her to lay down. And then his demeanor changed, and he drove her to a secluded area in the woods. He gets a rope. He drags her into the woods. He takes off her clothes. And as he's above her, they hear a dog barking. And what she suspects is there was a campsite nearby. So the dog meant that there were people nearby. This guy freaks out, leaves. And then this poor child, she runs naked into the road. Someone finds her. They do a composite sketch. She gives all the information she knows, but the guy is never caught. And this is a woman as an adult. she says the internet changed things. She's starting to research. She started because she was like, if this happened to me, I know this happened to somebody else. This wasn't a one-time thing. And so when she saw this Facebook page, she reached out to Kathy and let her know. And she started looking into Andrea's page and she saw the family photo of Dennis, Brenda, and Andrea. And she looked at Dennis and she goes, oh my God, that's him.
That's the guy.
That's the guy. Fuck. And it's at this point, Kathy hears this and it's like, it all is adding up. She also hears Dennis's voice and she's like, that's his voice. And so they start to decide if he could have been in that location, and the location that she was picked up in is near his work. She remembers smelling paint and he worked at a local marina painting boats and working with fumes like that. He had a red pickup truck, which is a similar truck to what picked her up at the time. And then all these other details come up. Andrea's friends are calling in or writing in and saying her dad was really abusive, and her friends recall how he would yell at her, chase her. At dinner, they had leftover sandwiches while the parents had hamburgers. And if she complained, he hit her, almost knocking her off the chair. And her mother did nothing. Her friends talk about how Andrea says that her dad would come into her room and make her do sexual things to him. When Andrea went to the school and when her friends went to the school to report this behavior, this is the 80s, they didn't have, I don't think they believed children, and it all makes sense that she was acting out. But what they would do is they would call your parents and they would sit in a room and they say, what did you say? And so Andrea would back off and say, no, nothing. It's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. So her friends would say that she wanted to leave, but that Andrea wanted to stay for her baby sister that was just born.
And she stayed till she was 14.
Well, she wanted to leave, but at 13, she had a baby sister that was born and she took care of her. She was the one, she fed her. She like took care of this baby.
She should take the baby with her when she leaves.
Totally. Her friends asked her to go. And so when she did disappear, people thought maybe she did leave.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so nobody looked for her. I mean, they did, but there were people that spotted her in Holland. They thought maybe she's just a runaway. When she disappeared, her aunt called into the police and said, hey, you need to look at Dennis Bowman. Something's not right there. Mm-hmm. And so when we start to dig deeper into Dennis, which is what Kathy did, as soon as she found this, she got the Freedom of Information Act, she got all these case files on him. They realized that that is just the tip of the iceberg. He was arrested for breaking and entering and stalking a previous coworker. He served a year in county jail for that. In 1980, at the age of 31, he attacked a teenager, pulled her off her bike, fired gunshots at her. And when there was a truck coming down the hill, she ran, waved it down, got in the car. He was eventually caught. Dennis Bowman was caught. And he was convicted of attempted assault with intent to commit sexual misconduct. And at his sentencing, they even said he is a danger to women if he is not confined. He was sentenced to 5 to 10 years in prison for the attack when Andrea was just 6 years old. So Kathy, this guy is in her sights. This is it. Kathy is, it's compounded. She's devastated because she believes that Dennis killed his adopted daughter. And mm-hmm. Kathy believed that she was giving her child up to a family that would love her. Mm-hmm. It's compounded because she thought that she was giving her child up to have a better life. And the realization that the people who adopted her daughter are monsters is too much to bear. And she puts all of her energy into making sure he pays. And she finds out what happened to her daughter. So they have these conferences called Missing in Michigan, which is essentially a convention where people who have missing loved ones come and they're able to have a support group and talk about their loved ones. And when she goes there, it's her second year going, and she teams up with Carl, this sleuth armchair detective. And they go to this Missing in Michigan convention, and they see Brenda, her mother. The adoptive mother is there, And she, Brenda, notices Kathy, and Kathy just goes absolutely apeshit and is like, why don't you tell them about Dennis? And starts yelling at her, like talks about how if she had a pair of coffee in her hand, she'd throw it in the woman's face. She says, what are you supposed to think with your husband? And so Kathy leaves. She's fuming mad, holding up a sign that says, find Andrea Bowman. And Carl's like, you know, what are we supposed to think with your husband? And Brenda says, well, I haven't forgotten, but I have forgiven him. I take my marriage vows very seriously. Which is to say, she knows that he was convicted of attempted murder, and she has forgiven him, and she takes her marriage vows very seriously. Kathy is all in on making sure to expose this fucking Dennis Bowman guy. And this relationship with Meta, this relationship with Meta, the woman who came forward about her experience when she was 6 years old, invigorates her. And they talk about how they create this like really beautiful mother-daughter, surrogate mother-daughter relationship in a lot of ways. And so they start to get drones of where the Bowmans live. And Kathy notices this little patch of area in their house. And she's like, that's where Andrea is buried. And the police are like, that's not possible because they moved houses after Andrea went missing. Like, they didn't even have this house. They're like, there's no way Andrea's there. He lived by a forest. Mm-hmm. Like, the body, there's no way.
Like, he'd have had to take her with him when he moved.
Kathy becomes a dog on a bone. She is absolutely obsessed. And she starts pretty much like, what is the word I want to say? It's not abusing, but it's like assault. Starts taunting them. She starts like harassing. That's the word. I couldn't think of it. So she starts essentially harassing Dennis and Brenda. She writes on Facebook that he killed Andrea. She writes that Karma is a patient gangster. She's calling, leaving messages. When the messages run out, she calls again. She calls again. She's harassing them. She's talking about how Andrea is buried in the backyard. She also gets a billboard on the way to Dennis's work, and it's a full missing persons poster for Andrea, with her picture and everything. And she's like, I did it to taunt him because I knew I wanted him to see her face every day because there were no posters up until I got there. And so she's going all in. It's very like three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. She's just like taunting this guy. She's harassing him. And while this is happening, there is another cold case I'm going to talk about. It's 1980 and we have Kathleen Doyle. This is happening in Norfolk, Virginia. Kathleen Doyle in 1980, so we're going back in time, is 25 years old. She is an independent, brave, smart woman. She is a writer. She loves adventure. She's married to a pilot. She's 4'11". And it is at the age of 25 that they find her in her home. She has been sexually assaulted and she has been brutally murdered. Her case goes cold. They have no idea. They have some specimens. They have some semen from the rape kit and from some of the evidence. But again, this is in 1980. This is before DNA, but they have some pretty well-preserved DNA. Her father, until the day he died in 2016, had been trying to find her killer. He couldn't rest until it. And unfortunately, he died not knowing who murdered his daughter. However, they were able to get some DNA from this cold case, and it was pretty well preserved. So they started to use ancestry records, you know, DNA.com, all that stuff. And they were able to use genetic genealogy, and they found 31 names. And on that list is Dennis Bowman. So they're looking at this list. They're cross-referencing it with like previous convictions and things like that. And Dennis Bowman doesn't look good, right? There's a history there. What's also interesting is that month, there is a conference for regional homicide investigators in Norfolk. And the lead investigator in this case just strikes up this conversation with Brian Fuller, who happens to also be investigating Andrea's disappearance in Hamilton, Michigan. And they just happen to strike up a conversation, and he shows him the list. And Brian Fuller in Hamilton, Michigan is going, you know, Dennis Bowman is our main suspect. He sees that name on that list and he goes, I don't know any of these other guys, but if that guy's on your list, He's your guy.
It's him.
It's fucking him.
Oh my God.
And they're like, the luck of these two guys talking to each other is fucking insane. And so at the conference, they spend the rest of the conference coming up with a case. They start looking at when he was in Michigan, because at the time of Kathleen's murder, he was living in Michigan. If you recall, in 1980, that was also the case where he was convicted of attempting to murder and attempted sexual misconduct. So one of those trials, someone wrote in saying, hey, he was serving 2 weeks training in Norfolk, Virginia. Mm-hmm. He had to serve 2 weeks training in Norfolk, and they have the date, and the date that he was there that was signed, that was a legal document, was the date in which Kathleen Doyle was murdered. So they have him there at that time. They don't have a full DNA match. So what happens is at this time, Kathy is harassing Brenda and Dennis. And essentially what she says is she pushes them into talking to the police. And the police are going, this is great because we have an open line of communication. And so they're essentially using Kathy's harassment, bringing them into the police station and saying, what's going on? Let's talk about this harassment that you're experiencing. They offer them water. They both drink the water. And boom, they have Dennis's DNA. They're able to take that cup, test the DNA, and it is a full match for the DNA found at Kathleen Doyle's murder scene. One morning, the police shows up at the Bowmans. Meta finds out from a neighbor of the Bowmans, calls Kathy, and just goes, they got him. The detectives, he's pulled in. They also pull Brenda in. They're interviewing Dennis. And Dennis is like, I don't know why you're here. I don't know what's going on. He talks to them for hours. He denies it at first. And then he finally admits that one night when he was in Virginia, he got very drunk and he saw the Doyle house. He breaks in and he sees her there and he accidentally stabs her and he leaves. He's totally trying to...
He's a bystander, sounds like, really.
Nothing is his fault. He's totally trying to manipulate the situation. He's trying to minimize...
He's like, you know what? Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I wish I could have...
I would have...
Controlled that. And then they're like... Obviously, I couldn't.
And then they reveal, you sexually assaulted her. He's like, no, I didn't. I don't know what you're talking about. And the interview is really jarring because you see someone lying with such ease, which is... so scary to me. And he says it's this demon that lives inside him. He starts drawing pictures of the demon.
Right, because he's trying to get ready for his insanity defense.
Yeah. And he's saying, I didn't do it. And they leave. And it's like a very Robert Durst jinx moment where you just hear him go, I've done it again. There's no doubt that he did it. And they feel satisfied that they have enough information. That confession will stand in the court. Brenda is being interviewed and you see her going through all the stages of grief, denying it, things like that. What's interesting about Brenda is she stands by her husband. She stands by him and she still loves him. And she knows what he did, but she is a very religious person and it's very hard to reconcile. It's hard not to feel angry at her. And I think we're meant to feel angry at her because you're like, you know, you're just protecting this man, but you have this child. Like, how did you not know that your daughter who goes missing is like, you're living with a monster. Like, you know what he's done, but she just doesn't see that part of him. And so they're trying to use Brenda because she's his only lifeline. They're trying to use Brenda to get him to admit what he did to Andrea. And what they know is that Kathleen's murder happened in Virginia. And so they're saying, hey, listen, if you want to stay in Michigan to serve your time, you have to tell us what happened to Andrea. If not, we will send you to Virginia and you will, and your wife can't be there and you won't have any visitation. So they're trying to use this relationship in order for him to admit it. He denies. There's a phone call you see of him and Brenda goes, well, you're just not going to admit something that you didn't do. Like, she's totally in denial that he had anything to do with Andrea's disappearance. I mean, he's the one that reported her missing, right? And so he finally tells the police, the detectives, hey, I'd like to talk to Brenda. And it's like a huge hoopla for them to get this conversation. But he goes, it's going to be worth your time. And before Brenda comes in, he tells the prosecutor, I hope you have your cameras rolling. And it's in this call that he admits to his wife that he knows that Andrea is dead and he knows that she's been dead since she went missing in 1989. He says they got in a fight and she fell down the stairs and she died. And he put her in a drum and he put her out to trash. The trash got her. And that's it. And Kathy doesn't believe it, obviously. Of course, I don't believe for a second that she fell down the stairs. I think he murdered her. And I think that it was because he was sexually abusing her. And he knew it was only a matter of time before she told the right person. And what's crazy is she said that whenever she said that her father was sexually abusing, her mother never believed her. Not once, never. What's really crazy is at that point, when she initially went missing, Dennis said that she took $100 from them before she ran away. And what's wild is that the one police report from this missing persons case was that Dennis was the victim and Andrea was the perpetrator because she stole money from him. So the one police report they have from 1989 was that she was the criminal.
Right.
It's so fucked. And Kathy is amazing. Kathy is this like brassy, bold, like pretty direct, wild lady. And she's very compelling to watch. And she's incredible. She doesn't quit. Let me tell you that. But then they realize, as Dennis tells her that this happened, he tells Brenda that this happened. He's also writing letters to her. He's also calling her. And the detectives realize that the story is constantly changing. He is telling her that he actually didn't put her in a drum and put her out to the garbage. He had this very special ceremony where he covered her in spices and buried her near a cemetery. And so the police are investigating all of this and they're realizing that's not true. So at this point, there's like 3 to 4 stories. They're interviewing Dennis. They're like, where's Andrea's body? He's like, I'm never going to tell you. You'll never find out. Brenda, meanwhile, is saying she still loves him, even though what he did to her, quote, daughter's body, she knows that he knew she was dead the whole time. The police are trying to use Brenda to get him to tell the truth. So Brenda is calling Dennis saying he owes her for this, that she just wants to have her daughter's ashes on an urn. And also that if he tells her, then he can possibly stay in Michigan and they can visit. It's the only thing that they can do. Right? She still loves him and she doesn't want him to be in Virginia because she can't move there. And finally, he says where Andrea is. He tells her that she has been there the whole time and that she is in their backyard, exactly where Kathy thought she was.
Kathy knew it.
Kathy knew who did it and where she was the whole time.
How frustrating for her.
The whole time. He moved and Brenda's like, but we didn't know this house existed. How is she here? He goes, well, I moved the barrel to the new house. When they dug up the barrel, they found the body. They found her body in a bag full of diapers to mask the smell. They found a candy wrapper from 1989, so they know she's been there. They use Kathy's DNA to test and match it, and it is confirmed that it is a DNA match. Brenda is staying at his side. It's
no, it makes sense that he would pick someone like that, that he could abuse that way.
Control
their mind, you know,
super controlling, super manipulative. It's in prison that he also reveals that he has sexually assaulted more women before him and Brenda were married. And shortly after him and Brenda were married, he denies abusing Meta. Meta knows that it was him. We don't know the extent of his victims, but there just has to be more, unfortunately. He pled no contest to second-degree murder of Andrea, and he was sentenced in 2022 to a minimum of 35 years to 50 years. And the prosecutors knew he did all of this so he could control his story and control where he was, which was in Michigan. And they didn't want him to have any control of where he ended up. So they extradited him to Virginia, where he is serving 2 life sentences. Brenda had Andrea cremated, and she gave Kathy half of the ashes. While Kathy accepted the ashes, it infuriated her because she said, "You're just chopping her up more. She wants all of them." And Brenda's like, "Yours should be happy with what you got." And Kathy's like, Kathy was hoping to find some peace, but she's still so mad. And I think she is on a mission to find more of Dennis Bowman's victims because she feels like that's her mission in life. Kathleen's aunt, who they were very close in age, 7 years apart, she's interviewed heavily in the documentary as a representative from Kathleen's family. And you could tell how close they were, how wonderful, how much she loved her niece. And she talked about how her and Kathleen's flowers where lilacs always bloomed. And every spring when the lilacs bloomed, she would say, "You know, Kathleen, I miss you so much. Do you see the blooms?" And when they find out who her murderer was, when they find out that it was Dennis Bowman in the autumn, her lilac bush bloomed. That never happens. And she said, "You know, we can remember this horrible man, but we should remember these women, Kathleen Doyle and Andrea Bowman, who, or Alexis, as Kathy named her, and these women who were abused and murdered by this horrible man, but who had a whole life ahead of them. And the women that found the murderer." Anyway, it's an incredible documentary. It's called Into the Fire. It's on Netflix. It's amazing. I tried to get as much information in, but I highly recommend you giving it a watch. It's really amazing. Is there any other information? Do you have any questions about the documentary that I watched? Is there anything?
Here's what I want to say. I can't wait to see it. And dear readers, because we're at a certain amount of time here and I have to hustle and be somewhere else, we're going to call it an app. And I'll do my story next week.
Yeah, do your story next week. Hey, dear readers, we love you. Thank you for listening. Watch that documentary. Let us know what you think. I'm sure you've watched it as well. Goodbye.
Bye, dear readers.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
You've created a cool indoor retreat. Now let Mountain Air Comfort Systems provide the quiet and energy-efficient comfort you can depend on with a range of innovative cooling solutions like the Carrier Infinity Heat Pump that delivers premium home heating and cooling performance. Learn more at mountainairmobile.com. You make it a home. Let Mountain Air Comfort Systems make it more comfortable. Rebates, incentives, and financing are available for a limited time. Mountain Air Comfort Systems and Carrier. Turn to the experts.